This is Phoenix FM. Ah, that is his little theme tune. I'm joined in the studio by retired CID Murder Squad Detective Roy Tyzak with Crime Time.
Hi, Michelle.
Really nice to see you. Now, today we've got we're going to talk to Roy about his time in the East End of London when you first started off in the police in the 1970s.
Yeah, indeed.
So before we start, just sort of what made you want to join the police force in the first place? I don't think I've ever asked you that.
No, you haven't. Well, I've always wanted to. I think since I was a kid, as lots of boys do, they want to be either an engine driver or a spaceman or something like that. And I wanted to be a policeman. But although there seemed to be something stopping me, I had a dog, an Alsatian. And I thought I couldn't bear with the thought of actually parting with the dog, and they wouldn't let me take him to Hendon for training, so I had to wait until my lovely dog passed on, and then I thought, right, nothing's stopping me. And I had a friend who worked at the Met Police Sports Club at Chigwell, and I used to take him up there and pick him up when he finished work. And I got to speak to a lot of the policemen up there, and one of them convinced me to go and join. So I walked into the old Chapel Heath police station one day and got a form, and off I went. But I was a little surprised, actually, to be accepted. Not that I got any criminal convictions, but I'd had a lot of jobs. I was in my late 20s, so I was quite a late joiner. But before then, I'd been everything from a Dr. Bernardo's ambulance driver, a door-to-door encyclopedia salesman, a petrol pump attendant. I worked in the Trevor Sweets factory. I'd driven vans for companies. I worked for Stanwood Radio selling televisions. I'd done the lot.
Yep.
And I thought, well, is this going to go against me? But surprisingly, in the interview, when I told them this, I waited for their reaction. And they sort of went into a little huddle. And they said, well, actually, we're quite pleased because it means you've got a rounded view on life. They said they get lots of people come straight from the cadet school. And they tend to have a bit of a tunnel vision.
Mm.
So they were quite pleased to have somebody that had been around a bit. And then it went on from there. As soon as I joined, I thought, yeah, this is good.
Like, and do you think if you'd have been that age now and you'd have tried to join the police force, do you think, is it a different, I mean, I don't know whether you know, is it a lot stricter to kind of get in?
No, I think I probably shouldn't say this, but I think it's easier. I think standards have been dropped, and you see it on the street. That you see policemen walking along chatting on their mobile phones, or their uniforms are scruffy, or they've got hands in their pockets. They're just sort of, I know they sound insignificant things, but in my day, when you're a policeman, if you're on the street, you're not just there to go and deal with one specific thing, as people tend to be now. You see a policeman and he's on his way to report something.
Yeah.
In my day, you had the time to be out on the street and patrol and to actually look for trouble. And you had to have your eyes and ears open all the time. My very first crime arrest, in fact, as a young PC, I was told, when you're walking along the street, if you've got nothing to do, look at the cars that are parked, have a quick look at the registration plate, and then the tax disc as you walk past, and see if they match. Because, of course, you didn't have the computer systems then, so someone could put a false tax disc on and wouldn't be picked up unless somebody literally saw it and realised it was different. So I thought, I'll do this, and I walked out from Lima Street Police Station, just up the road to Ailey Street, and there was a van parked outside a company. And when I looked, sure enough, the registration plate didn't match the tax disc.
Mm.
So I waited for the man to come out, questioned him, and he admitted stealing the tax disc. So within sort of 100 yards from the police station, I had a crime arrest.
Yeah.
Which, for a young PC, was a good thing, because so often they go out and they're interested in if somebody's got a bald tire on their car or on this sort of thing, or jumping a red traffic light. Well, I used to think beyond that. And so if I stopped a car, it may be because he had an obviously bald tyre, but I'd want to get the boot up and take all the boot lining out to see if he had a weapon in there and start searching the car thoroughly and do a thorough check on the driver. And that way you'd end up with something far more serious. So I had this this thief-taker way of looking at things rather than just looking at for motoring offences. So that really is what sort of got me into the crime side of it.
And how did you, I would say most people that go into the police force, they might stay, I'm not too sure how you go up through the ranks, yeah. But a lot of people who actually join the police force will only ever be a PC, or maybe they might go up the next yes. section. So you got to work for, we'll talk about your influences, who your influences
sure.
were, but you got to work in CID.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that is quite a step up from being a general policeman.
It is. It's an interesting thing because you have two types of people that join the police. You have people that join that want to be a good police officer, want to stop crime, want to put criminals away.
Yeah.
And you have the other type who are career policemen who simply want to go up the ladder.
Yeah.
And I'm not, degrading them. We have to have the upper echelon, but it's good if they do work their way up through the ranks and they get there on their merit. And I've known people and lovely people, very good policemen, but for example, one who was very keen on football and his expertise was in crowd management. So he, I know for a fact, got a couple of his sort of higher, from inspector, chief inspector up to superintendent. And this was all because of his knowledge of football crowds, and he ended up as a chief superintendent, but specialised, but basically in looking after the stadiums and in his ground, which is fine. But it's not really my idea of being a good policeman as much as, he probably would deal with his job at the ground, but then go home with his eyes closed. Whereas I never could. When I was on duty or off duty, it didn't make any difference. I think I just had as many crime arrests off duty as I did on duty.
Was there any friends or anybody that you kind
yes.
of... Yeah, I'm looking at Penelope, your lovely wife in the corner. Was there any friends that you kind of thought, did you arrest any of your friends or kind of just say to them, look, your tax dis has run out or you've not done this and that? Or
I wasn't quite... I'm not the policeman who would arrest his own granny, which I think is the expression.
Yeah.
Because I'd already put her away anyway. But, No, I did once have to arrest a friend, which wasn't easy. He was the manager of a club in a fairly well-known mental institution in Essex. And I knew his girlfriend, very tiny little girl, lovely girl, very small. And I was, even in those days, I was still managing bands and things. And I'd had a band playing in the sports club this evening. And later on in the evening, I was driving through Ilford, and I heard a call come out of a girl who'd been injured, thrown from a car, was the call. Somebody else was dealing with it. I thought I'd go and assist them, and I pulled up behind an ambulance, got in the back, and realised this girl was this chap's girlfriend. And she was quite badly injured, and she hadn't fallen from the car. She'd actually thrown herself from his moving car in fear of her life. Because he had attacked her at the club. She'd managed to escape. He then dragged her into her car, car, and she'd managed to throw herself out. So I was quite enraged by this, really, and I went back to the club, sealed off the scene, found bits of evidence, found her shoes in the field and all this sort of thing. And I was supposed to go off duty at 10, but I said to the governor, I'm not going home until we've sorted this out. And I just drove around the area virtually all night. I knew he had to appear from somewhere, and I kept an eye on his home. Finally, I spotted him and arrested him and took him into the police station. And he was charged with the offence, and I had to go around, took a statement from her. But as often happens with domestic violence, when it came to the court date, she retracted her statement, wouldn't give evidence against him.
Yeah.
You often hear these days of policemen not wanting to get involved in what are termed domestic disputes.
Yeah.
And the general public say, oh, that's wrong, they should get involved and all the rest of it. But 9 out of 10 times, in my experience, they would back out and would not give evidence. And the policeman ends up being the baddie from both sides, both for arresting the villain, because then the wife doesn't like it, and the husband doesn't like it because he's been arrested and he believes you're just interfering.
Yeah.
So it's a very, very difficult situation.
Community radio for Brentwood and Billericay. This is Phoenix FM.
Now I'm joined in the studio by retired CID Murder Squad Detective Roy Tysak.
Hello.
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 I thought you'd fallen asleep then in the corner. Just
Sorry, I should have said hello, hello, hello.
No, don't do that. Now, we were talking about you working in the police force, and you actually went to work in Whitechapel.
Yes.
So describe what Whitechapel, back in the 1970s, what sort of crimes were going on? Because this is before computers, this is before mobile phones. You would have had probably radios back in those days and the old whistle.
That's right.
Maybe.
Yep.
So what sort of crimes were going on, and what was it like in the East End at that time?
Well, it was a great area. I worked at Lehman Street Police Station, which has recently been featured, although it's an older one, on the television series Ripper Street. Mm. And it shows it as a pretty dark area to work in. Well, it wasn't quite that bad in the 70s, but it was still very interesting. Predominantly, the area was the rag trade, basically. All down the Whitechapel Road and Commercial Road, you had small shops and warehouses selling a whole range of, and manufacturing a whole range of goods, from shirts and dresses to leather coats and sheepskins, this sort of thing. So there was a great deal of theft offences. They had an offence called the jump-ups, and a lot of the goods were delivered there by the British Road Transport Services, as they were in there, or BRS, British Road Services. And there were these little articulated lorries used to come down. And the van drivers used to roll up the shutters, jump off with the goods, roll down the shutters, but not lock them every time, and take goods into the shops. The jump-up team would follow, two men in a car. One would jump out, lift the shutter and get in the van and close the shutter again. Then when the driver came back and got in and drove off, he'd be in the back of the van sorting through the boxes and trying to get one that looked interesting. He then moved that to the back of the lorry. When they stopped at a set of traffic lights, he'd rise the shutter, jump out with the parcel, put it into their car and drive off.
Mm.
Sometimes they'd be lucky and they'd get something really worth a lot of money, perhaps a carton full of jewellery. Other time they may get a box full of left shoes.
That'd be
totally,
my luck.
Totally useless.
Yeah.
But some of these were, in fact, the ex-members of the Cray gang. They formed this jump-up team. And one particular chap, his name was Connie or Cornelius, and I was so determined to get him. And one day I saw him driving along, two of them going along the little VW Golf. I can see it now as if it was happening. And there were just the two of them in this empty car. About 15 minutes later, I saw them again, same two, same car, with a great big parcel in the back. So we thought, we've got him. So I was in an unmarked car with a colleague, so we followed him around the back streets. Didn't want to stop him because he wanted to know where they hide at, where they were taking all this stuff to. And sure enough, they pulled up outside this little lockup. And we let them get out, we let them unlock it, so we were certain. Then we moved in to arrest them. Well, Connie was as good as gold, and my colleague got hold of him. Unfortunately, the other chap, who I didn't know, was totally different, and he just went ballistic. And it was a real Western-type fight. We were rolling around on the pavement, and a member of the public came running over, and he thought that I was attacking this chap. So he immediately began to attack me as well.
Yep.
So I just screamed at him, I said, top pocket, top pocket. And he sort of looked at me and he put his hand in my top pocket and saw the warrant card. He then realised, and then he started helping me.
Yep.
And we got him, and that was quite a coup, because when we opened up this lockup, there was tons and tons of stuff which linked them to so many thefts all around the East End.
Mm.
So that was quite a prevalent crime. As far as violence was concerned, yes, there was violence.
Yep.
There were lots. There were shotguns were used quite a lot in those days, both in robberies and just to sort out arguments between gangs. So we had quite a lot of that. And of course, bank technology wasn't so advanced then.
Mm.
So there were more bank robberies.
Yeah.
I must just tell you one funny story. I was on a Q car, which was the unmarked crime car, and we had a call to a bank in the Whitechapel Road where there'd been a robbery. I went down there and we went in and I spoke to the cashier and said, can you identify, can you recognise a chap? She said, well, it was a bit unusual. Said he was quite short, he had a very strong Irish accent, and he was wearing a balaclava with only one eye hole cut in it. Well, I looked at my colleagues and they looked back at me and we said to the cashier, just wait there, don't touch anything, just wait, we'll be back soon. And this is not a joke, it's absolutely true. We got in our car and we drove to the home of a very well-known one-eyed Irish bank robber. We went into his house and he was sitting in the kitchen counting the money.
Mm.
And I said to him, said, Paddy, that's what his name, yep. It wasn't a slang. I said, Paddy, why didn't you cut two eye holes in your balaclava?
Mm.
And he thought for a moment, he looked at me and he said, and what would be the point of that then?
Yeah.
And he just didn't see
yeah.
that if he'd had two eye holes cut, they wouldn't have realised he was a one-eyed man. But that was a pretty easy arrest. But so there were lots of bank robberies in the East End. But
And were there more violent? I mean, today there seems to be people. I mean, there probably would have been the same sort of criminals, but maybe we hear about it more now. But you seem to get a lot more criminals now that would beat up pensioners, that would attack women. I mean, was that kind of thing going on back then? But we didn't hear about it so much in the press, or is it something that kind of thing is happening?
I think it's happening more now.
Yeah.
In those days, you had violence. You had some nasty, very severe violence, but it tended to be, I suppose, the only way I can explain it is purposeful violence.
And was it honour among thieves type thing?
Yeah,
you know, like,
yes.
You know, criminals would have been, they wouldn't have, if somebody was in prison for rape or murdering a child, they would be seen as completely separate to
Precisely.
Somebody who's robbed a bank or, you know, petty.
Precisely. And a decent criminal would give evidence against somebody who had committed a crime that was a bit below the belt.
Yeah.
So to if they were robbing a bank, then they would be violent. There would be violence against a cashier in order to get the money.
Mm.
They wouldn't just attack somebody in the street to get a mobile phone.
Yeah.
It wasn't not like they would now. They wouldn't go and stab somebody or murder somebody to get a phone that's worth 200 quid.
Yeah.
It just wasn't in their makeup.
Mm.
The good villains would consider they'd let themselves down if they ever did something like that.
Now the uniforms. What uniforms did you used to wear? What were they like in comparison to what they have now?
Totally different. I mean, you see the policeman walking on the road today. The first thing, of course, he's got this bright yellow fluorescent jacket. We didn't have any of those.
I didn't realise it was a policeman. I thought it was somebody worked in a building site.
I know.
Really?
I know.
I didn't even know that. How embarrassing. Sorry.
I think that they're overused, quite frankly, what they call the florrie jacket. We would just wear a nice, smart uniform if the weather was okay. We'd wear the tunic with the silver buttons, with a belt, which had a silver buckle as well, which looked really smart.
Yep.
We had the whistle and chain. Okay, we didn't really have any occasion to use it, and it wouldn't have been heard with all the traffic.
Yeah.
But it still was part of the uniform. And if you ever turned up on parade, because we used to parade before every shift, you literally line up and you have to produce what they call your appointments, which is truncheon, notebook, pencil, this sort of thing.
Mm.
And if you had anything missing, then you were just not allowed on the street. You had to go and replace it.
Yeah.
I've seen people told not to go on duty because they had dark blue socks on instead of black.
Yeah.
I mean, it was that they were that fussy.
Yeah.
You were going on the street representing the Metropolitan Police, and it had to be perfect. We had a small wooden truncheon, and that was it. We didn't even carry handcuffs. They were kept in the police station safe.
Yeah.
We didn't have such a thing as a metal asp that they carry now, the telescopic metal truncheon.
Yeah.
We certainly didn't have any gas sprays. We certainly, bulletproof vests hadn't been invented, or stab-proof vests, nothing at all. So we would just go out on the streets in a basic uniform, an ordinary policeman's helmet, not reinforced, not strengthened. If we went to a riot situation, we had these small shields, but which were, you know, virtually useless, and we'd be more likely to pick up a dustbin lid to protect ourselves rather than have any equipment. We didn't have the gloves that protect you against knife wounds, nothing at all. It's very, very basic.
Yep.
But we got by, and I think that it's all, again, is down to the people's interpretation of the law.
Yep.
And people will see a policeman and they would respect a policeman.
Yes, definitely.
And they wouldn't think of attacking them for no reason.
No.
But
how times have changed.
Absolutely. And you did mention about influences, and there was one man influenced me greatly when I first joined, a chap called Henry Stevens.
Mm.
I'll just tell you briefly about Henry. This goes back before my time to 1958, when he was a young PC in Bromley, south of the river. There was a burglary, and he saw this burglar climbing over a fence. He chased him and shouted for him to stop, and he didn't, so he climbed over the fence and carried on chasing him. The burglar then turned round and pointed a gun at Henry's face and said, "If you don't stop, you're going to get this." Now, I don't know about you, but I think I would have thought very carefully about what I did next.
Yeah.
Henry continued to chase him. The man fired the gun and shot him in the face. The bullet actually ricocheted off Henry's teeth and lodged in his tongue.
Oh, my gosh.
What did Henry do? He got up and carried on chasing him.
Yeah.
He caught him, pushed him up against a fence, got the gun out of his hand. This is with having been shot in the mouth. He got the gun out of his hand, held onto the man's coat. The man started to run, dragging Henry with him, managed to wriggle out of his overcoat and get away. because of stuff that was in the pockets, they identified him. They took photos to Henry in hospital, and he again identified him. And he was arrested. Mm. Henry got the George Cross for that, which is the highest award that outside of the military that you can get in peacetime.
Yep.
And absolutely deserved. Now, when I first met Henry, he was an inspector on our crime squad, and he was just incredible. If you walked along the street with him, he couldn't just walk without spotting everything. He'd be looking over walls, he'd be looking under vehicles, he'd be looking round corners. He was amazing. Mm. And he was the one that said to me, you can never go out on the streets of East London and come back and say that nothing's happened.
Yeah.
There's always something you can do. And I learned so much from him. And, you know, it's a thing that I later passed on when I was running a crime squad, to say to people, if you go out and come back and say that nothing has happened, then you've got your eyes shut.
Yeah.
We used to stop people coming out of the underground station on a Friday afternoon with a big parcel, and 9 out of 10 times it'd be stolen goods.
Yeah.
Because people would say, oh, do you want a leather jacket? And they say, oh, yeah, bring it in on Friday when we get paid. So they'd have it on Friday.
Yeah.
They're going to nick something out of the office, take something home stationary. They'd take it on a Friday when it's quiet.
There'd be people sitting out there going, oh, wow, don't let that.
I won't do it on a Friday anymore.
Don't do it on a Friday, Roy's told you. Right, we're just coming to up to 12 o'clock, Roy, so okay. It's gone really quick today, but thanks for coming in. You'll be
my
back
pleasure.
In against next month.
Yes, indeed.
And have you got any gigs coming up? Where can people, just really quickly.
Matthew Shepherd is playing at the Hermit Club on the Friday the 21st of February.
Yep.
Unfortunately, the 3rd of January one was cancelled, not because of his fault. They just didn't realise that the club wasn't open that night.
Right, okay.
So that's his next one. I'm actually going up to the Essex Arms tonight. There's some gigs on there. So, you know, lots going on.
Brilliant. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you again next month. That's
cheers.
Roy Tyzak. Right, just coming up to 12, here's the news.
On the hour, across Brentwood and Billericay.